Why does it feel like nobody really gives us the inside scoop? Join us on The Powers That Be, the podcast where insiders from Puck break down who has influence, how they use it, and what it actually means for you. New episodes every weekday. Listen to The Powers That Be wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to the best of WIP.
Richie Rich, good morning.
Hello, Joe.
Hello there, Johnny.
The month of May 2026 is incredible for its moon schedule. We started May 1st. It was a flower moon,
okay.
A full moon.
Okay.
We have a second full moon this month on May 31st, which is very rare.
Okay.
And that's called a blue moon.
Blue moon.
The second blue moon every month is called a blue moon. And this is this normally only happens like once every 2 or 3 years, so it is pretty rare.
What do you call double sweep of Philly sports?
Blue moon.
Yeah. What do you call double sweep?
Ding, ding, ding.
Ding a dong ding.
Give a name for that.
Pathetic.
Boom moon. How about boom moon?
Embarrassing.
Boom moon. Boom moon. Yeah.
Getting mooned by the Sixers.
Getting mooned.
I like the boom moon
a
lot.
It's amazing how different the emotions feel. I mean, there's a pride with how the Flyers made us proud for it. Well, look, Sixers made us proud a week ago. It's amazing how fast they spit it up. I mean, that was 9 days ago. And now it's done. It was done 8 days later. So let's get to it. Let's start with yesterday, and then we'll broaden it out to the bigger picture. Yesterday, and really in many ways this series, flat out gutless. Flat out pathetic. I mean, you know, there are not many times in Philly sports where I can say gutless. This is one of them. I mean, they did not show up for yesterday's game, and at no time within that game could they stabilize the ship. Phils didn't show up for the season. But they actually have stabilized the ship. Sixers never could stabilize the ship yesterday. And by the way, you know what's incredible? Because I was figuring this out after the game. They only played 11 playoff games. In 4 of them, they were a disgrace. I'm not counting game 3. It was relatively close.
We lost by 30-plus points.
Yeah,
4 postseason games this year were lost by 30-plus points.
I mean, it's amazing they won a round.
That's just, you're right, gutless. That is not something to be proud of in your team, that they quit, that they give up.
Yeah,
that's what this felt like.
They definitely did.
Not going to win it, so why even try?
I know. And look,
come on.
And we all know there's some physical complications. Joel at the head of the pack, and obviously you don't have a bench, and the guys are getting tired. Joel and Paul George were wearing down, no doubt. But
that doesn't mean allow the second most points in Sixers playoff history last night. That's disgusting stuff. You know, like game one of this series, we lost by 39 points.
Yep.
This one was just 30, but we lost by an average of 22 points.
In this series?
Sweep by the Knicks.
Okay. Yeah.
So again, shouldn't this team be too proud to let that happen?
Yes, yes.
Shouldn't this city, with its basketball tradition, be too proud to let that happen? This Sixers team does not make me proud, and they underperform when it matters, and it doesn't seem to matter as much as it should to these guys. The Knicks, they started this last game 15-20 from the field.
And they're almost
11-12 from 3.
Yeah.
And VJ and Tyrese went 1 for 13 from 3-point range in that last game. So no chance there. The Knicks led by as many as 44. I mean,
it
feels so hopeless. And it's a learned hopelessness. This is the definition. Like, I took a psych class in college. You learn about learned hopelessness. Where this just, you can't seem to shake the feeling that it's going to keep happening again when it's attached to Joel Embiid. And lo and behold, when you look at Joel Embiid, he's 32 now. The Sixers still have not advanced past the second round since 2001 before Joel even got here.
Yeah, and they won't.
And, Joel exited in round 2 in 2018, 2019, 2021, 2022, 2023, and of course in this 2026.
Right.
It just feels like too little fight, too little heart, And it's spearheaded by Joel himself.
Who talked after the game about it being a success because he was able to play. And on one hand, I know what he's saying, but don't say that, dude. Are you kidding me?
I don't want to hear it.
No one wants to hear it. Look, let's get at it here. We want to hear from you today at 215-592-9494. So let's tackle the big picture. The big picture is Joel and the team tied together, so let's go there.
They're no closer than they've ever been.
Yeah, here's the big picture. It should be over for Joel Embiid with the 76ers. It should be over. Now, I don't think it will be, because I think there's a greater chance than not that they will not trade him, but they should, even if it's a dump him. James, credit to you. You were flat out right in the middle of the season when you said trade him when his value was at the highest it was at that point. Now it's only going to go lower. Obviously, it'll never be re to where it was 2 and 3 years ago when you were saying trade him back then. That value will never come back. So obviously, they've missed multiple windows to trade him for higher value. But here's the deal. It's time to dump him, even if that's all it is a dump. Because they're not going to win with Joel Embiid. They're not. It's not happening. I truly appreciate that he came back from the appendectomy. I do think he's tougher than at times we thought.
So are you done thinking he's going to do something? Like, now you're
John,
done.
I just
you're
told saying you it's over.
Jettison Joel.
Yes.
Even though you thought we were going to somehow figure out a way to turn this around.
Well, I thought it was a 50-50. I thought it was a 50-50 series, and I leaned toward the Sixers. You know, very slight lean, but I thought it was like a toss-up series. I was shocked.
Well, it's kind of like you can't have it both ways, can you?
Sure.
Do you want Joel back?
John,
do you think Joel will lead this team to anything?
I want you to listen, because I don't think you heard my last 2 minutes. It should be done.
Joel needs to be gone.
That's what I said.
I don't want Joel to be a Sixer.
Yes, that's what I just said.
Okay,
yes.
Good.
So here's the thing. He can't sustain. Even if he can play, he can't sustain. One of the hallmarks of the playoffs is you have to basically play every game. You can't take games off, weeks off. You can't say, I'll sit out a couple. There's no time for that. And one of the things we saw, certainly in this series in particular, As the games added up, and they're coming every other day, he simply could not. And I know he scored a lot of points yesterday, but he couldn't sustain. I saw a moment yesterday that really spoke volumes.
So why
tonight.
Did you think we were going to come back
well,
and we'd be
2-2? Because I was wrong. But hold on. We'll get to that. So there was a moment yesterday, and it was a very random moment, but it spoke volumes to me. There was a rebound that came right to Joel. I believe it was in the second quarter. There was a Knicks player, I forget which one, who jumped over Joel to tap the ball out to one of his teammates on the other side of the court. Joel, he can't effectively jump. It doesn't matter how skilled he is offensively. If he can't jump, is afraid to land, can't stay healthy, can't be fully healthy, can't answer the bell every other day in the playoffs, it should be over. Now, I don't think for the Sixers it will be, in the sense that I think they're going to try again. But I'm telling you, there is no doubt in my mind, and yes, it's taken me longer to get here than some, Rhea being the prime example, James being the next example, but there's no doubt in my mind it should be over. I got to tell you, I even have concerns about Maxey, because you say to yourself, should they just make him a Jrue Holiday-type trade him while there's value, and just try to build the whole thing around Edgecombe and the long future? But look, they're not going to do that. What they are obviously going to do at some point here is transition more to a Maxey Edgecombe team. But even that, we see the limitations of Maxey. God bless him, love him, all that. But Brunson's better. There's no doubt. Brunson's better. And Maxey's got some limitations, and they showed up in this game yesterday and this series. Look, we'll take your reaction at 215-592-9494. John, what do you make of the big picture?
I don't know. I think you're getting off easy.
With what?
With Joel. It's last week.
Because I picked the Sixers to win the series.
Everyone thought Joel was somehow magically healed.
No, we didn't.
And ready to go and would lead us to a win in this series.
No, it's just fandom.
That's craziness, man.
What you're saying is not accurate. What a bunch of people said is we leaned toward the Sixers, but nobody thought we were out of the woods on Joel and his injuries. No one thought that. We didn't get one phone call on that.
Okay. And look, it's been so long with this team. It's like, they showed us something, and we wanted to believe for a second. We were wrong. It was dumb.
Yeah, and so to answer your question, John, when they were down 2-0, my thought was the spirit that they played with against the Celtics, where they fought back, I thought they had more of that in them. They didn't. I was wrong.
Well, that's the thing. Every year, it is the same thing. Attrition is what occurs in the postseason. When you have to go back-to-back, when you have to go series-to-series. And it's just so – it's laughable that we convince ourselves – that we talk ourselves year after year into the same concept. Like, even though Joel's never done it, he'll do it this year. Even though Joel, he'll earn some mental toughness along the way. He's not gonna. It just is not built into this man.
No,
and I think he's an incredible, it seems like he's an incredible doting father. It seems like he applies himself to the game of basketball. And I appreciate that. I appreciate the return from his appendectomy in 17 days or whatever that was. That required the desire to get out there and help his team. But then it ended. You know, like that desire, why couldn't it buoy him to a better performance? Why couldn't it inspire him to be a better teammate when it mattered the most? And it's not just this year. It's going back year after year. It's 2018, 19, 21, 22, 23, 26, where we can't get out of the second round because of this guy. This guy. And, you know, thank you also, Josh Harris. At least we're somehow avoiding that first luxury apron tax. You know, thank God. Thank God we were somehow able to avoid that.
Just to make sure that was sarcasm, right?
Yes. Yeah. There's so much dysfunction, and it all spurs from, you know, Josh Harris. We know that. Yeah. But it's Joel also.
And Morey's
got
a big hand.
Allowed him to become, what they've allowed him to morph into, it's not a winning player.
No.
And yes, Daryl Morey, he gets to hide behind it all somehow. We don't know his side of things, and I don't know that I want to anymore.
I'd fire
Let's
him today.
Let's just get out of here.
John, if I was Josh Harris,
number
I'd fire
one
him
guy
today.
Who's got to go today.
Yeah, today. And he won't be.
He's in the combine in Chicago.
He won't be fired. We'll get to that. Ugh. Yeah, we'll get to that. So, look, we want your reaction on obviously an all-time bad Philly sports weekend. I don't know if they've ever both been swept in the same week. I can't imagine. I certainly don't think they've ever been swept back-to-back days. So we'll get to the Flyers thing.
But it feels so different, you know?
Feels very different. Feels very different.
The Flyers, it feels, man, they ran into a juggernaut.
Yeah, they did.
Without their best offensive player, Owen Tippett, still never made it back.
That was a big injury.
That hurt.
So look, 215-592-9494. What's your reaction to all of it? Phil's playing better baseball. Flyers obviously with a brighter future than the Sixers. What do you make of the Sixers thing? Gutless for yesterday. And big picture, where do you land on Joel in the future of this franchise? 215-592-9494. Your phone calls on all of it. Joe to Cameron, John Ritchie, it's 94 WIP. James, can you think of a better word than gutless for yesterday?
Oh, man. No. Pathetic, you know? Honestly, the end of game three and yesterday was pathetic. I mean,
because they were there for a stretch of game three.
They were in it. Yeah, and then at the end, it looked like they just forgot how to play basketball and they were running around with chickens with their heads cut off and turning the ball over right and left. And then to do that and then not even show up, not even fight, especially contrasted with the Flyers team that fought their asses off.
They
didn't get it done, but they fought, man, and they got a well-deserved ovation from the crowd, which was so cool to see. When you contrast these two teams, it highlights just how embarrassing the Sixers are. And it, like, to the point of me before, it's so disappointing because, you know, I haven't believed in this team for a long time.
Yep.
Seeing them beat the Celtics in Game 7, it tricked me a little bit into maybe, even though my brain says no. And it hurts that much more now.
Yeah.
Knicks
are better than I thought, John. You were worried about the Knicks all year. I really wasn't.
The Knicks were better. Tough, man.
Tough.
And
they were tough last year
when they mashed our faces.
Well, like 2 years ago, yeah.
Oh, was it two?
Yeah, they didn't make the playoffs last year.
Oh,
we keep forgetting, John.
I know.
I know, I forgot.
You're right, and that's
same.
Embarrassing.
Yeah.
I think I blocked it out. I think I gloss over and block out big chunks of what this team has done to all of us because it just makes me feel good enough to keep getting by.
It's
with
horrible.
Them. And so I'm done. I'm done just getting by with Joel. Obviously, we got to get out from under this somehow, but I don't even know that that's feasible.
No, I know.
It drives me insane that he could be talking after this series saying, you know, this was a successful year for me.
Incredible. Rhea, what's your top line thought on the Sixers?
Morey's got to go.
Yeah.
I mean, Joel, nothing surprises me when he makes comments like that. I would think at this point he would know. I mean, because he even said, I know it's not the right mentality. You know it, and you said it anyway.
Right.
But, you know, he is what he is. He can't. I mean, he said it worked. How many games did he play this year? 38? 40?
I'd have to look it up.
I mean, it's, you know.
Successful season.
How successful was it? But the guy
for
me.
He has to work on being available a little more.
Yeah, okay. I mean, when he didn't play that last game on last Monday night, you know, it was like you could see the writing on the wall. But Morey is the one who has to go. He just flat out has to go. He's done nothing in, what, 6 years?
And, of course, Josh Harris won't fire him today.
No.
There's no way.
Josh Harris doesn't care.
Josh Harris.
Do you think Josh Harris even knows the Sixers lost the series?
I think he was there. I did ask
I'm just
that.
Joking.
I will tell you this, James, and this is saying something, because for me, Norman Brandman was my all-time least favorite Philadelphia sports figure. Forget player, coach, all-time.
Oh, Harris is leapfrogged.
I think he's passed him.
Oh,
it's
100%.
Crazy, yeah.
I think Josh Harris is now my all-time number one most I can't stand him involved in Philly sports ever.
Me too. Yeah. I hadn't put it in those terms, but absolutely. I can't stand him. I can't stand him.
No, for Daryl Morey to leave Nick Nurse again, as usual, to answer all the, to take all the bullets, for the players to take the bullets, it's just, it's disgraceful.
Disgraceful is a great word for it.
They're in a spot where if they trade Embiid, it will not be something that makes people, they're not going to get back something that makes people happy. They're not going to get what they would have previously gotten
back. The value's not there.
Yeah, I mean, you go back a couple years ago, you could have probably gotten 4 first-round picks and 3 pick swaps. All right, stuff like that's off the table. Now, what you're probably getting back if you trade them is just someone else's bad contracts, but probably just a little shorter. So Joel's got 3 years left on his deal. What if I told you could get back a player who can't play but has 2 years left on his deal? Would you dump Joel? And my answer is yes. But just know that player you get back or that combination is not going to help you. Because that to me is where his value is. So let's get to the Twitter poll questions of the day brought to us by Armin Chevrolet. Visit ArminChevy.com to check out Armin's selection of top quality Car Bravo certified pre-owned vehicles. That's ArminChevy.com. So Rhea was the first of the four of us out on Joel probably, what would you say, Rhea, about 3 years ago?
When I started the show with you guys in the morning.
Yeah, about 3.
Yeah, so you would ask me, and I said I would trade him.
Yep.
And you know who wanted him at the time?
Hmm.
The Knicks.
I do remember that.
There was a lot of rumors.
And they made the trade for Towns instead.
Yeah, they really wanted him.
So, James, you were probably out on Joel, was it a year or more ago?
Yeah, about a year and a half, maybe, something like that. Yeah.
And, John, when would you say? It's a little later for you. Sometime this season?
I have no idea.
But you were more of a keeper than a get rid of her most league. I was not out until the Celtics, during the Celtics series. Then I was back in, and now
it's what they do to you.
They do, and now I'm totally out. So we got two different poll questions related to Joel. The first is, should the Sixers trade Joel this offseason? All four of us are in agreement they should. And that means even if you dump him for nothing, like just to try to get off of them. When I say nothing, I mean bad contracts back, but slightly shorter. So like, would I take someone's horrible player who makes a ton of money and can't help you, but like has 2 years left in his deal instead of 3? Yes, I would. I would just end the misery. The second poll question to me is the more interesting one. Will the Sixers trade Joel this offseason? I will make a prediction. Not only won't they, and this part we might not ever find out, but I will predict that they won't try to. John, do you think the Sixers will try to trade Joel this offseason?
It feels so foolish. Less than a year after you've signed him to a deal which pays him over $58 million next year.
Well, it's been 2 years
escalate.
Now.
Sorry, no.
It was before the...
Oh, the Olympics.
Wasn't it before...
The summer...
Yeah, it was before
Olympics. So
yeah,
it was last season.
No,
it's last season.
Yeah, well,
he got re-upped last season.
Well, like 19 months ago or something.
Yeah,
not
before this season, before the previous season.
Right,
the season before this.
Yeah. Yeah, 2 6-year seasons ago is what
okay.
I'm saying. Yeah,
but yes. Over $58 million next season. It's going to balloon to what, $62 million?
Yeah, I believe it's 3 years, $191 million to go.
Oh my gosh.
I think that's the terms.
So there's 2 left on that? You said three
left. Years. You got 3 years left.
So there's no way anyone in their right mind will take that. There's just no possible way.
I don't agree. I think there is a chance because again, like we could come up with any number of guys, but
Can you absorb that?
Well, take when Chris Webber had a bad contract or Russell Westbrook had a bad contract. Like, there are bad contracts. Other people have bad contracts. And you just say, I'll swap your bad contract for mine, knowing that Joel can help a team more than some players. So it's not, I don't think it's inconceivable.
It feels like we have to run it back because no one will likely be able to take on this deal.
They may. And by the way, I'll say this. If they run it back, I'm moving on from Nick Nurse. And I don't think Nick Nurse is bad. And I feel bad saying this a few days after his brother died. I don't want to go too hard here. I'll just say this. I think Nick Nurse is a good coach. I think you can get a better coach. If you have the same nucleus back, I would try with a different coach.
Do you think a better coach could actually motivate the players to do
probably
what he's
not
asking?
Probably not.
I mean,
so what's the point?
The point is just to try. I'm just saying, if I have the same four guys back.
I didn't always love the way he ran, you know, some of his games, the game plan. But in his defense, never knowing time if Joel Embiid is going to play. How do you game plan?
Rhea, I'm not putting Nick Nurse in the top 10 of culpable. The top 10. I'm just saying if I'm stuck with the same four players, I'm just going to try something else.
If they get rid of Nurse and they don't get rid of Maury, then what are we doing?
Maury should be fired this morning.
Yes, correct.
He should be fired this morning.
He's in Chicago.
James, they won't fire
him
this
morning.
Do you actually think
he's going to move Nick Nurse? I don't.
I think it's unlikely but possible.
Okay.
But I think that would be really cowardly by Daryl Moore if he fires Nurse and gets to keep his job.
Especially with as little as we've heard from him explaining any of this. And Nick Nurse, it feels like he's been through the ringer to the point where I'd like to see a before and after photo. It feels like he's going to be Abraham Lincoln, the before and after presidency.
It's going to look like
photo.
A president.
Seriously.
Photo, yeah.
Look, it feels like he is declining physically because it's so arduous getting through a day with these guys.
And I don't know how many people thought of the Toronto series yesterday, because the ultimate shot yesterday was Nick Nurse on the first defensive possession of the second half. When he leaned back in exasperation.
Well, I saw that repeatedly.
Well, that's the exact same thing Brett Brown did during the Toronto series about Ben Simmons one time. And I thought, man, how it's come full circle.
Yeah.
I don't know if people remember this. James, you remember the exasperation Brett Brown showed one time?
That one time.
It was the same look. It was, and it's like, wow, it's 7 years later, and this is still where our squad's at. Years later, same thing.
And the common denominator?
Mm-hmm. Joel Embiid. And two of them. And Josh Harris.
Well, yeah.
Because Josh Harris has, you know, allowed Jerry Colangelo, Brian Colangelo, and now essentially the debacle that is Daryl Morey.
I'm Anna Garcia, host of True Crime News, the podcast. Every week, we bring you in-depth coverage on cases making headlines, as well as those that go under the radar. Tune in for Murders That Defy Explanation, Mystery Seeking Exploration, and Shocking Secrets That Will Leave You Breathless. Each week, we honor the victims by going beyond the salacious in our search for justice. Crime never stops, and neither do we. Listen to True Crime News, available now on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Do you agree, disagree, the Joel Embiid era ended yesterday? Again, when I say it, it's not, in practicality, I recognize he's probably going to be here. It's over, though. Like, sometimes, you know, you could, a relationship could end, but it still lasts for a while, but there's a moment where it is over. The Joel Embiid era ended yesterday. There's just no shot they're ever going to win with him as a major part of the team. None. And the fact that they keep doing this over and over is, it's really an embarrassment on them and on us. All right, we'll get back to your reaction to the Sixers here. But they weren't the only team to get swept out of the same building. But my goodness, did it sound different, right? Yesterday, we heard a lot of "Let's go Knicks" and Knicks fans chanting as they took over the building. And there was zero for the Sixers fans to cheer for yesterday. Opposite on Saturday night. So the Flyers go down in OT to the Hurricanes. They fought. They lost to a team that was clearly better than them. A team that might win the Cup. A Hurricanes team that looks like they are a juggernaut right now. I think they're the first team to what? The 85 Oilers?
Yes.
To win
the first two. And without losing the game.
Incredible. They're on an incredible run to start the postseason. So they lost to a much better team. But I think there's a positivity around the Flyers that just has not been present with the Sixers in a long time, because it's the beginning for them. Let's hear what it sounded like as the Flyers were, you know, kind of shaking hands with the Hurricanes, and it was ending on Saturday. That's pretty loud, Hugh. I mean, that's a team that's got swept. That is a home loss in the playoffs to end the season. And that sounded to me and you can kind of see it with some of the camera angles, of a lot of people staying in their seats to kind of say thank you and cheer the Flyers as their season ended.
Yeah, it brought a lot of people back to hockey, man. Mm-hmm. It brought a lot of us, you know, out to see the matches, and the gatekeepers, it gave them something to do. So there's a lot going on with this, and I think that a lot of people feel like this is the beginning of something special. You know, because and I'm not mad at them. The gatekeepers, you know, you keep all the gates you want to keep, you know, but it was fun to be able to talk about hockey on the fly like we did for the last couple of weeks. It really, really was. And now you look at this team and you see the potential of what it could possibly be.
Yeah, no, it was an exciting run. I think there's a lot of reasons to feel excellent about where the franchise is moving forward. They're ahead of schedule. And now there's the exciting part moving forward will be, how do they build off this, right? What do they do this offseason? Do they go after an established star?
Mm-hmm.
You know, what happens with the roster the way is? Do they kind of move to a point where they try to go all in to kind of move to the next step next year? Or is it more of a, hey, we'll add a little bit, but we're not going to rush this? I mean, those are the questions they have to answer now, and that's for Breer and Jonesy. And we'll get to all that. But I think proud is a good word for the Flyers, considering where they were at the Olympic break, where they got to get into the postseason, the series win over the Penguins. And I thought for the most part, they fought really hard against the Hurricanes. I mean, two of those games go to overtime, Hugh. I mean, it's rare to see a series where I did feel like, man for man, the Flyers were outmanned, right? Like, the other team had more ready-to-go championship kind of players. And yet, two of the games go to overtime. I mean, they
fought hard.
They fought. The series could be 2-2 or 3-1 right now, even though they're not even close to as good. That's a credit to them.
Yeah, and they fought hard, man. That's the thing that jumped out to me, because you could clearly see the difference in the two teams and where the Flyers are trying to be. But they still fought hard. They still fought hard, and I think that's why people did what they did, because they saw that. There was no quit in that Flyers squad.
Yeah, there was. And let's hear Rick Tocchet after the game talking about the fans.
I think it's amazing. Like, I really wanted to thank the fans for that. That was awesome for them to cheer us and to yell go Flyers and stuff. That, you know, maybe, you know, it puts us on the map a little bit. You know, I was just talking to Jonesy. He was saying, man, that was awesome to hear the fans cheer the guys on. So that's a good thing for the guys to understand this summer. You know, we get this fans behind, and we get this organization back on the map, and we got a taste, right? Now what it's going to take. But yeah, I'm really, really like to thank the fans for that. That was wonderful.
Well, they've got this fan base back, paying attention, and locked into this team again. So it's going to be an interesting offseason. Let's hear Tocchet talking about the team, the year they had, and his takeaway on it.
We squeezed as much juice from this team. I mean, I can't ask for more. I mean, we hung in there. It's a good hockey team over there. They roll four lines. They're flying. We got, you know, I'm not going to get into it now. We got some guys banged up, broken ribs and all that sort of stuff. So I can't. I mean, they gave it all. You know, obviously we'd like a little more possession, and there's some things that we could wish done. But, you know, we ran some guys pretty, you know, to the ground a little bit, and they tried tonight.
They did try. I mean, he's talking about.
What are you talking about?
With the ribs?
That's the first thing that I. Like, because in hockey, you don't really talk about.
I wondered about Tippett, because he didn't play in the series.
Well, it could be Tippett. They had a lot of guys banged up by the end of the series, but by game four, they were. Well, scratch Michkov, healthy scratch.
Yep.
Which, you know.
Second time this postseason.
Is going to be a thing this offseason, as much as everybody's going to want to avoid it. Anyway, I think Konechny was banged up, even though he played every game. I think by the end, they were just. He was right. They were pretty broken.
Yeah, banged up is different than broken ribs, though. That's something. That's crazy.
Yeah.
Like, that goes to show you how tough hockey players are. Man, broken ribs.
It's amazing.
Ribs.
Well,
Tippett did not play, and I think it's if that's it, then I don't know.
We're recklessly speculating. It's just that when he said it, it just jumped out at me, because you very rarely hear of a direct injury, a specific injury when it comes to hockey players.
Almost never.
Damn.
Yeah. They almost never tell. It is so amazing, the difference between a team and just the way we feel about them making their first run versus a team that has given us the same crap over and over. Like, it's hard not to feel good about the Flyers, even though the result of the second round was literally the same thing. Swept at home to end it, right? Like, finished at home.
Yeah. Expectations matter.
They matter so much.
Yep.
The Flyers remind me of where the Sixers were when they first got in the playoffs 2017, 2018, right? Like, the future is bright. Anything's possible. And now all these 8-9 years later, we feel like garbage about the Sixers because they've wasted this time.
So, yeah.
The Flyers feel like they have now the next few years to make us feel proud.
Yes. I do want to say, I think there's going to be, a tendency or a want to by fans to now immediately raise the bar, raise the expectations for next season. Don't think that we're just an offseason away from being the Carolina Hurricanes. Still going to take some time. I mean, there's the Austin Matthews thing that's out there.
Yep.
But that would have to be a trade. If you look at the free agents that are available, nobody really fits what our timeline one or really what we want to do in this offseason, like what we need to acquire. And it's going to take a few years for, I think, these young guys to really come into their own. Like, Porter Martone's still going to add some weight. You know, we'll see what happens with the Michkov thing. I'll be very curious. And this is, it reminds me a little bit of the A.J. Brown thing, in that no Flyers fan wants to admit that this is a thing. But multiple benchings in the postseason.
That's a lot.
And for the season to end that way with him sitting in the press box. Like, I'm sorry. It's just going to be one of the biggest storylines of the offseason for the Flyers.
Yeah,
it just is.
I always feel like this is one of the trickiest things for executives in sports. When your team gets good quicker than you thought, do you go all in? Do you keep pushing?
Yeah.
Or do you kind of play it out in a more natural way? Because fans want to move forward, right? They don't want to just be like decent again. Yeah. They want to go and win a championship.
So I think the interesting thing we're going to have to look out for, if anything comes out of Michkov's camp about they're unhappy with the way that he was handled this season. Mm. Like, him and his camp have been silent about this whole thing. You know, it was a very similar situation last season. Tortorella sat him way more than Tocchet did. I mean, Tortorella, I don't think, was a big fan of Michkov at all. But it was silence. And that, to me, indicated they were like, okay, like, we'll take this on the chin. We understand this is an offseason that's very important. We'll go out there and we'll get better. Obviously, that didn't work. He had the injury. So if I hear something this offseason about, like, they didn't love the way that he was handled by the coaching staff or the organization, I got my antenna up on it.
Well, and now, and this is a good thing for them, but also not a good thing, the spotlight is on them, right? They can't, listen, let's just be real. There's been a lot of summers the last 10 years where the Flyers have just, they could have made a move and it's like a tree falling in the forest and no one heard it, right? Like, that's where they were. But now people are back in. They just watched two playoff series. So every move they make or every kind of rumor is going to cause a little reverberation and some waves. So it's a good thing for them because they got interest again. But now we're going to be on things. So we will see where it goes from here. But overall, an excellent end to the season, an excellent playoff run. You feel good about where the Flyers are. The Sixers, you feel like garbage this morning. I watched that game yesterday thinking, I'm a fool. I got fooled last week. I bought back in. I thought they'd compete against the Knicks, and they got rocked.
You are a fool.
I'm a fool. I'm a complete fool. And I'm done being fooled by this. And I'm done. I feel like a moron. And I'm done with the Embiid stuff. That press conference yesterday, his game yesterday on offense was fine. He made every shot he took. His game on defense was embarrassing. He can't move anymore. But the press conference stuff, get this guy out of here. I can't do it anymore. Good morning.
Good morning. I would like to not happily report that the nasty cold I acquired last Sunday has lasted longer than the Sixers series with the Knicks.
Well, so. That's what happens with sweeps.
Yes.
Cold can linger for 2 weeks.
Oh, it's
a
lingering.
Sweep does
I appreciate
last
it.
That long. Rhea, your reaction yesterday as the Sixers go out. I mean, look, I think we all realized this was going to end soon after Friday night after being down 0-3. But to be down 47 points at home in an elimination game is a new low. And the Sixers seem to find new lows every time they get knocked out of the playoffs.
This is true. Could they? Okay, they have to stop playing on Mother's Day and Father's Day.
So
because they got crushed on the Father's Day. Remember, that was when the season started late because of COVID.
That was the Atlanta Hawks when Ben went and dunked. So 2019 was the shot by Kawhi, Mother's Day. 2021, Ben wouldn't dunk against the Hawks. Happy Father's Day to all the dads out there. 3 years ago in Boston was the Mother's Day massacre up there, and then we get yesterday.
Yes.
Yeah, no more.
We don't want to celebrate with you people anymore.
No more.
No, 5 minutes in, what bothered me the most, you can miss your shots, and obviously Maxi was, 1 for 7 from 3, but you have to defend. Those shots that the Knicks were hitting, they were not being defended on.
It was a shoot-around.
It was a shoot-around.
It felt like there were no Sixers on the court. Yeah. I'm like, McBride is open again?
Again.
Can someone put a hand in his face?
It was remarkable. 5 minutes in, and I made it to the third quarter. And I think I text my sister, and I said, I'm torn between watching the rest of this game or just scrolling through my phone and
doom,
liking.
They call that doom
scrolling. No, I wasn't. I like a lot of Pitbull videos. Anything that has Pitbulls on them, I love them. So I found myself sitting there and I'm watching the game and I'm like, oh, that's kind of cute. Oh, they just scored again. And I'm like, I was with you when it got to the, I think when Embiid sat down, I said, I think I'm free to go now.
So I was
I'm out of jail.
I was kind of half looking and half looking away, and then I looked up and it was 118-79. I was like, let's just turn this off.
Yeah, ain't nobody.
I've done yeoman's work here.
Yes, I put in three quarters of this nonsense. Yeah. It was bad in a lot of ways. And you're right, the defense, it almost felt like they gave up yesterday defensively.
Gave up like 3 minutes into the game.
I know.
I've never seen anything like that. And the point was, you battled to come back from 3-1. It's not like it was completely impossible.
No.
But the minute they stepped on the court, it was impossible.
Well, they had no fight, and it was embarrassing. And Rhea, I was saying this, it feels ironic in a sad way, because like, when they started this thing all those years ago, right, they tore the team apart because they didn't want to be stuck in the middle, right? They wanted to build a great team.
Yeah.
Rhea, they're stuck in the middle. It's like a dog chasing its tail. It's the same story.
I want to say I told you all that karma was going to bite you all in the Easter.
It did bite
but,
them.
But, it's because other teams, that was always the excuse. Well, this team tanked and this team. Well, they've all gotten better.
Yep.
They've all gone further.
Well, and, yes.
It was the problem was it was built upon a faulty foundation. When your foundation is built upon a player who was injured the first 2 years of his career. Now, the first one, it was injury from high school, from college. But the second year was because he didn't rehab the injury. So it was built upon a faulty foundation.
Yeah, when you watch the teams in the playoffs right now, they either have one great star that's like durable and great, or they have an amazing depth, or both. Yeah. And we don't have either of those things here. We have some good players, but no depth to the team. And then there's the Embiid thing. Really, I want you to hear this one, because Embiid had quite the press conference yesterday. He pulled one out of the Sirianni playbook of bringing the kid to the press conference.
I will just say, I had to bite my tongue this morning. Because I didn't like it. And we went after Sirianni on it. Really did.
It doesn't feel like it's the right spot. It isn't, again, the kid, the kid seems like a great
nothing
kid.
But you just don't
bring the kid there.
To a win, it's fine.
Yes. But even if you win, you're down 3-1. It's a weird spot.
But I'm okay with it. It doesn't hit odd.
It does. Yeah, but you're right. And Sirianni did bring the kid after a win. They did beat the Browns that day. Now,
well, it was the Browns.
It was the Browns.
And it was quite difficult.
And he did scream at the people in the crowd.
I'm sure Sirianni was sitting at home watching it. I was like, going,
"Oh, they gave him grace."
Well, is he going to get killed like me?
Well, he shouldn't have brought the kid. I'll say it. It's a weird look. But here's one of the things he said yesterday. Let's hear Embiid on what he wants his legacy to be whenever he's done playing basketball.
No, I don't care. I got this beautiful young man. You guys might have taken away my chance to put my daughter to sleep. My wife is going to be extremely mad at me. That's all I care about. I got my family. I got, my kids. Hopefully, I get more. I got my mom, my dad. I don't know. I could care less about, what people think about me when it comes to basketball. I think I've done a lot of stuff off the court, so hopefully that's the part that's remembered, whether it's here in Philadelphia, all over the U.S., in Africa. And that's been my goal. My focus is just, keep doing, keep improving in these things and keep helping people. So, yes, I mean, to answer your question, that's really what I want my legacy to be. Basketball is just a platform.
No, basketball is what you're paid to do.
Yeah, a lot of money.
All those things are one. And he's by all accounts, never gets in any trouble. Good guy. Seems like a great family man. Arthur's incredibly adorable.
Yep.
The question was asked about your basketball.
Not your life legacy, your basketball legacy.
Yeah, it's to say basketball doesn't matter, it's what you're paid to do.
Well, I thought he hid behind the kid and his family there.
It's your job. It's just your job.
Also, it's nobody there's fault he has to do a press conference and can't put the younger one to bed. That's his duty as an NBA player, right? They have to speak after the game. That's just like, well, you guys are making me late for bedtime. No, they're not. No, that's just your job, Joel.
Yeah. I'm listening and I'm cringing. I'm listening to you guys talk and you're right, because you're trying to humanize something that a lot of people, they get it, but they're not going to understand, because basketball is your livelihood.
You're having a news conference because you lost the game. Basketball.
Yes. And the thing is, you're reflecting, like, everything that you said is true.
And that's all great.
Yeah, it is about your legacy and what you've been able to put, the position you've been able to put.
It's like you have an amazing family. I mean, it's awesome.
But at that moment, it's really read the room.
It's about the game.
Nobody cares about all of that. Nobody cares about the fact that you have a great family, which I'm pretty sure you do, and I hope you're hearing this right the right way if you're listening to it. None of that matters when you're talking to people.
After what just happened.
Like, and this is the reality. You're in a great spot, and I think this is where you have to keep it in perspective. Because there's a lot of people that made sacrifices to come to that game, to watch you play, to support
Mother's
you.
Day.
Yeah,
yes.
Not only that.
Did you see that one guy who was interviewed? I got to make it up to my mom somehow.
Yeah. Gas is high. Gas is high. And you know, people are making, you know, financial sacrifices. And you got to understand that some people, when they hear you say that, it rubs them the wrong way. Yeah. That's the reality of it.
The question is about basketball.
Yeah. And to it's, have that kind of effort out there and then to sit there and say that, it's almost like a smack in the face to the average everyday person.
That wasn't the one. It was the success. That was the one that bothered me more than that. Because I expect players to do that now. So, but when you hear the quote, it's like, yeah, okay, look, we're talking to you about basketball. The success quote was the one that got me.
It makes me feel like it's when I think of some players, they die to win and lose. He doesn't. Mm. I mean, I it's not about physical toughness. I just don't think he cares about winning and losing the way some great players. Look, when Kobe Bryant lost the game, it looked like he wanted to die. Like, yeah. he didn't want it. He couldn't handle it. He couldn't wait till the next season. With Joel, it's like, well, I had a good season.
I mean, it's a success because you weren't sure you could play because of the knee. 38 games.
38?
Yeah.
And that's a success? Like, what's a not success?
No, yeah, I get it. And it's... I'm sitting here while you guys are talking about it, and I'm trying to figure out when there was the disconnect, because I grew up in an era where, you know, and I played with some guys. That's all that mattered.
Oh yeah,
playing. You know, the money was nice. The money's nice. The money puts you in a position to take care of your family, but the game and the legacy was something that meant more to you than anything else. It's tied to the money that they're making now.
The money's so out of whack.
Yeah,
it's hard to fathom it.
Because when you're talking about the money that they're making right now, you're immortalized, regardless if you like it or not. You know, and you know, we make fun and talk about the fact that, you know, when I talk about Tobias Harris and what he's been able to accomplish, real when you look at just the monetary standpoint, he's made a ton of money. Hasn't celebrated any All-Star appearances. Yeah. They playing his ass off in the playoffs.
Wait, didn't
now.
Somebody tell me he was a Hall of Famer?
Well, Dr. J.
Yeah.
Dr. J.
But that's the disconnect.
Yeah.
Because now you have guys, in order to be that upper echelon star back in the day, you had to go out there and ball out. And when you went out there and balled out, the money was parallel to the way that you played. Nowadays, it's not like
that. Well, and it's not like, I mean, the NFL, outside of the very top echelon, you have to. They can cut you at any time.
Yeah, that's the difference.
Yeah, you have to play with an edge in that game.
That's the difference, and it's not. That's just the way guys see it now, because it's like their success. A lot of times, and I don't know if this is Joel Embiid's in the way that he thinks about it, but success nowadays is tied to how much money you make. Hmm. It's not tied to how many championships you have.
But I don't think that's most athletes. I think
it's a lot more than it has been in the past.
Maybe, there's more money now. But like, let's just use another one here in town. Could you ever imagine Jalen Hurts going to the podium after an Eagles playoff loss and saying my season was a success?
Again, different mentality.
That's the problem. Yeah.
But
Joel doesn't have Jalen's mentality.
But even in football, it's starting to change, though, Joe. With the NIL. Because think about...
But could you ever imagine Jalen... Let's use Jalen as the example. Jalen Hurts going to the podium, Eagles losing the playoffs. I had a good season.
Because, you know why it's like that?
He would never.
Because the money is a part of it, but you only got 17 chances to prove somebody wrong, and basketball is different.
Well, how about Bryce? I can't imagine Bryce doing that.
Bryce, you're talking about he had a good season. All depends on what happens this year. Because he has had a bounce back season.
Yeah, but again, I can't imagine Bryce at the podium saying, I found my season a success.
After losing the playoffs. His president of baseball operations put him in the mode of having to defend himself.
Yeah.
I mean, when he said he wasn't elite.
You really don't think Bryce would do that?
That's what I'm about to say.
I can easily see Bryce doing that.
He just
did that.
I can't see it at the post game after they get knocked out of the playoffs. Maybe I'm wrong. If it happens this year, it happens this year.
I think if there's one guy I wouldn't put it past, it's probably Bryce.
Yeah.
It just feels so tone-deaf.
Are you talking about the night of?
The night of.
The night of.
Not like in retrospect, I had a good year.
Yeah, not like the exit interview two days after.
Like they walked off the court and he's holding his kid saying, I had a successful year.
But see, here's another thing.
Four for four with a home run and they lost.
And here's another thing with Joel
Embiid.
Well,
I yell at him too if he did it.
Here's another thing that I feel with Joel Embiid. Now, I don't know if this is to be true, but I feel like for Joel Embiid, when he talks a lot of times and when he said what he's talking about, he's weighing the scrutiny over what he's been through, and then he's trying to, you know, I guess come to grips about the kind of season they had dealing with all the stuff that he had to deal with during this season. That's what it kind of sounds like to me, Joe. And when it comes off and when fans hear that.
The thing is, he knows it's going to come off. He goes, I know this is not the mentality.
Yeah, that's how he feels. That's how he feels about it.
And here's the thing is, we've spent all this time talking about Embiid when my number one problem is Daryl Morey.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the guy who conveniently
hopped on a plane to Chicago.
By the way, there's a 6:30 a.m. flight to Chicago that leaves out of Philadelphia. Could have gotten on that one.
Also, Rhea. They don't have a top five pick in the lottery. He has a 22nd pick. I'm not saying he shouldn't be there, right? If he's going to run the team, he should go to the combine. But like,
yeah, but the priority is not as great.
Right? Like,
as
if they had
a staff for that.
Yes,
you have a staff. You have scouts for it.
If he had to evaluate the number one overall player, that's like, I got to get there. He ran away.
He leaves stuff for Nick Nurse to handle. You know, and I haven't always been thrilled with his coaching. That man doesn't know if he's going to have Embiid till Friday.
Yeah.
When did they announce that Embiid was playing? What, like an hour before?
Yep.
So, I mean, I kind of feel bad for him, but he's got to take his bullets. Maxi is up there being asked about the acquisition. That is the funniest thing.
Him being asked about the McCain thing and the trade deadline?
Because he's like, and you just see Vijay. Vijay puts his head in and he's looking down like, I'm a rookie. I'm out on this one. I mean, it was embarrassing.
You put him in bad spots. You put him in bad spots to ask the question
exactly,
that you didn't answer.
Because you're not here to answer them.
Yeah. You said Nurse. Did you see the moment on camera yesterday? Oh, I think it was towards the end. Brett Brown in his final series as Sixers coach slumped his head back, Hugh. Like he just said, I'm done, right?
John actually had a great line. He said, I'd like to see what Nick Nurse looked like at the beginning of his tenure with the Sixers.
Yeah.
And now, kind of like how presidents age in 4 years.
He's aging like a sitting president.
Yes.
He's aging in dog years.
So let's talk about the Sixers, right? Let's talk about the Sixers. I'm sure everybody's going to want to. 215-592-9494, because I've listened a little bit today. And of course, I heard from the Ricky people yesterday. I heard from my Ricky co-host yesterday. And everybody is like melting down. It's like, Josh Harris got to sell the team, and we got to fire everyone, and we have to trade everyone, and blah, 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 blah. So here was Joel Embiid yesterday. He said something that made everybody mad.
I know we lost, you know, and I know that's not the right mentality to have, but, you know, for me, this was a success. I came into this year not knowing where I was going to be, you know, how long I was going to play, if I was even going to play based on how the knee was the last 2 years. And
I agree with him. I think I did not like the way it ended. Obviously, nobody wants to lose by 40 points on your home court, right? This was basically a good year for the Sixers that surpassed my expectations. And everyone is melting down and yelling and screaming and sell the team and fire this one and fire that one. What did you expect from the Sixers this year? Their over-under for wins was 43. They won 45 games. They're minus 900 on underdogs to the Celtics, who they haven't beaten in 40 years. They beat the Celtics. Mm. Nobody came into this year saying this team was a title contender. If I had told you before the year, here's what's going to happen. Vijay Edgecombe is going to have an awesome rookie season, probably at least the best third rookie of the year, maybe even the second moving forward, and get playoff experience and be a clutch player and get better through the year. And then Tyrese Maxey is going to get better again, and he's going to be an all-NBA player. And Paul George is probably going to be at least good enough to maybe sniff some trade talk in the offseason. And oh, by the way, also, you're going to beat the Celtics in the first round of the playoffs. They won 55 games, who you haven't beaten in 42 years, and come back from 3-1 to do it. Would you have taken that? And the answer is yes. Yes, you would have taken it. It didn't end in a great way, obviously. Again, no one wants to get your ass kicked by the Knicks at home, all that. But this season, for the franchise, considering the position they were in,
was a successful season. It just was. It didn't. This isn't the kind of season where you walk around and demand the owner fire the team and fire or sell the team and fire this one and fire that one and everything's got to go. I feel like it's crazy town. We came into the season, nobody expected anything for this team, like almost nothing. And for them to not only be in the playoffs, but beat probably the best team or at least the favorite in the Eastern Conference in the first round, I did not expect
without
them.
Without Jason Tatum.
In one game.
Well, yeah.
Well, without Jason Tatum. Game. Well, but they also came back from 3-1 with Jason Tatum. You know,
sure.
I don't know. I don't know what to say. Again, the end did not make me happy, but the season was successful. Considering the situation, considering what people expected, considering the situation they're in, this was a successful season for the Philadelphia 76ers.
Yeah, it's tough, man. It's tough. I hear you. And I think, yeah, if you're describing this at the beginning of the season, would you accept that as a result? Sure you would. It's like playing a certain hole on a golf course where you know it's treacherous and you say before the hole. Now, you're not a golfer, but as a golfer, there are certain holes you're like, you know what? I'll take a bogey right now.
Right. Yes.
I only have to play the hole. I'll take a bogey. You know what that's different? When you miss a 4-foot birdie putt.
Oh, that you could have gotten a birdie on. Oh,
it feels
sure.
differently.
Yes.
It feels
yes.
differently.
Yes.
So saying that prior to the season, I get it. Once you knock off the Celtics in the fashion in which they did, if you lose to the Knicks in 6 or 7 games in a competitive series, maybe this feels a little different. But to go out the way that they went out, being swept, being blown out in, what, 3 of the 4 games? They basically got blown out 3 out of 4
yeah.
games. I mean, game 2 was
yeah.
there for the
yeah.
taking. But,
yeah.
but 1-3-4, it seemed like...
Blown out in 2, convincing in 1, and then close in 1,
okay.
I would say. Yes.
However you want
yeah.
to parse
for
it.
Sure, for sure.
It doesn't feel good.
It doesn't feel good.
It doesn't feel good. So here's what I would say. I don't want to kill the Sixers for... what they did overall on the season. But I do empathize with those fans that have this sense of this is what it always is.
Mm-hmm.
There's always an excuse. There's always injuries. There's this. Bottom line is we go home in disappointing fashion in the second round. And here's what really, I believe, gets those Sixers fans that are feeling really angry and hopeless moving forward is the idea that what's going to change? What's going to change? When you say this person shouldn't be fired, that person should be fired, okay, I guess. But when you're a fan and you're saying moving forward, what's going to change? Something has to change. If you're not going to trade Joel Embiid, you can't get rid of Paul George. You mean tell me I got to stick with Nick Nurse as the head coach? And I got to stick with Daryl Morey as the GM? So as a fan, how is that? I don't know how that sort of elicits positive feelings today.
I can understand.
As a Sixers fan,
yes.
I don't feel that.
I can understand not being warm and fuzzy about it because the truth is that the next year at least is probably going to be a lot the same as the current year.
Yeah.
I think for me, I have moved off of the whole idea of winning a championship with Joel and Paul George. That ship sailed for me. Mm-hmm. It sailed. And I am already looking at what are we doing. Like, what are we doing now?
But you got to move them sooner rather than later.
Well,
because people can't move off of that if they're still here.
I get it. And the sad part is, at least for everyone who is hoping for major change, I don't see it the next year. Maybe after next season, you're going to have it. I think.
So another year?
Yes. I think what they're trying to do is they're trying to rebuild with those guys on the team and do the. Do
the longer they do this, Spike.
Do it both. Well, I just don't know what they can do.
The longer they do it this way, I don't know either. I'm sorry, I don't have the answer. I don't. I'm one of those guys that can complain. But the sooner they can start to build around Maxey and VJ Edgecombe without George and Joel Embiid, I think that's the sooner everybody's going to feel positive about the team moving forward. As long as Embiid is here, George is almost like just, he's just part of it, collateral damage, just part of
sure.
it.
Yeah.
I think people are going to have that empty feeling of this is what it's always, this is the way it's always going to end up. So what am I getting excited about? What am I being happy about?
I hear you. And we'll talk about the future coming up in a little bit. And I think the future is, I think there's a way you can figure it out. I just don't think you can this offseason. This season, this one ended up better than I thought it would. Again, final game, final series, did not end the way that I wanted it to. If you had asked me, are they going to beat two of the three best teams in the Eastern mm-hmm. Conference in the first two rounds of the playoffs, my gut would have been absolutely not.
You don't think being swept by New York stained or dimmed what they did in the first round?
It makes it feel worse. It doesn't change what happened.
But it takes the shine off of
sure,
it.
Sure, yes.
It takes the shine off
of it. I agree with you. It takes the shine
as,
off
as
it.
As impressive as that was,
yes.
This was just as disappointing.
So, last thing.
Maybe worse.
The last thing on that
yeah.
is...
Maybe worse.
The opening series, to me, was a moment in and of itself. It wasn't indicative of...
It wasn't
of
a history-changing moment. Only thing it changed was Embiid finally beat a worthy opponent.
He did, and there
but
was the first time...
But that's all it changed. But that's all it didn't change anything
but
else.
But that's all I wanted.
Well, that's all you wanted.
It's all I wanted.
But they were never
going to win the East.
That's not the majority
well,
of the
Sixers.
When
here
you beat
to,
the Celtics...
Yes.
Yes.
I am here. A nice reality check for everyone.
When you beat the Celtics...
Yes.
A team that we're supposed to hang a banner for.
Yes.
Yeah, then we should beat the next team. Or at least be competitive. They weren't even competitive in this Knicks series.
Oh,
You
can want it all you want. Oh, brother, I want to be able to dunk. I want to be 30 years old again. I don't want the gray hair there anymore. Reality's reality, though.
Yeah.
We do have a next question today.
When I look in the mirror, don't make me happy.
No.
Come on, fine.
Yeah, you're doing fine.
I meant in general.
Oh, okay.
Not me necessarily.
Okay. All right. Oh, okay. All right.
Listen, hell yeah.
Listen, you wake up and look at this mug every day, man. Yeah. You kidding me?
Hi, my name is Lloyd Lockridge, and I'm the host of a new podcast from Odyssey called Family Lore. In this podcast, I'm going to have people on to tell unusual and sometimes far-fetched stories about their families.
I've heard my whole life that she invented the margarita.
And then we're going to investigate those stories and find out how much of it is true.
He gets a patent 1 month before the Wright brothers. Oh my God.
Please follow and listen to Family Lore, an Odyssey podcast, available now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your shows.
Us to talk about it, the Athletic, Tony Jones. What's up, Tony?
I've never been introduced to Migos before, but I got to tell you, I'm all for it.
Well, that's the afternoon show for you. You're probably not introduced with Migos when you were covering the Jazz. That would be my guess.
I was not in it. I did try to get some Tribe Called Quest, and they did it once, and they were just really uncomfortable with it. So, yeah.
Man, with Tribe Called Quest, that's a mild hip-hop
yes.
right there. Yeah, that's mild.
Hey, listen, I got five said he was a, you know, five foot assassin, and you know the word assassin was just a bit too far.
So this was Tony's first year covering the Sixers, was covering the Jazz. How did you? Yeah, how'd you like your first year covering the Sixers, being here, those sorts? Before we get into the deep stuff, how was your first year here?
It was really good and really.
Ooh.
And it was a lot of different emotions at the same time. I mean, I know there are a lot of people who don't know me here, but I did kind of grow up here. I did go to high school here, so
okay.
You know that part wasn't hard, but I never moved across country with a kid and a wife before. Yeah. So that was really difficult, and it was really cheap to live in Utah, and it's not cheap to live out here. So that part was difficult as well.
Yeah, yeah, I definitely not cheap here. Now, not as bad as it could be. There are other places that are worse. So, Tony, I thought it was watching the players talk on the dais after the game. It was interesting to me, Maxey and Embiid specifically, because they didn't look like two guys who had just been swept, I guess. There was just more positive messaging than I thought. Did you feel that amongst the players, and did you get that sense as well?
Yeah, I think it was positive messaging from the sense that, you know, this team went through a lot. And it went through a lot internally. It went through a lot of changes internally. And, you know, this is a team that didn't give up on itself, as opposed to last year when they went 24-58. And, you know, by all accounts, they did give up on itself. And they knew coming into this year that, you know, that's what couldn't happen, right? Like, they had to be resilient. And there were a number of times, you know, there were a number of inflection points over the course of the year where, you know, the ship could have really gone off, the train could have really gone off the rails, and they would get a big win, or they would get a big stop, and they would get a big shot, or they would come up with a big couple of wins, you know, to you know, not completely fall off the cliff. And, you know, it deserves a lot of credit for that. It deserves a lot of credit for, you know, winning 45 games under the circumstances of Joel Embiid playing 38 games and Paul George missing 25 games. And, you know, and the Boston comeback was historic. The problem is, it's not good enough. And we're in this game to win championships. And if you're going to win championships, the New York Knicks showed you very rudely that, you know, the Philadelphia 76ers are far from that. So the question is, it's easy to be good in the NBA, or it's easier to be good, but the hardest step is to go from being good to being championship level. And, you know, right now, you know, as I watch the playoffs, there are three teams, maybe four, who are championship level, and that's the Oklahoma City Thunder, San Antonio Spurs, the New York Knicks, and maybe the Detroit Pistons.
When you look at this team moving forward, Tony, see, I mean, let me start here. When I hear the two leaders speaking the way they did about the season and about the overall view of the team, it almost says to me that they like the team, right? And they want to build off of that. I don't want to put words in your mouth, but it almost felt like you were saying they need to change some things up. So I guess I'm just wondering, what's the realistic changes that could be made, and how big do they have to be for this team to be better next year? Because like I said, listening to Maxey and Embiid, it almost sounds like they enjoy playing with this group of guys for the most part.
Right. No, I get you. And you know, here's the thing, because you hear a lot of doom and gloom today, right? Mm-hmm. Like, this team is stuck in the middle. There's no way up. There's a whole bunch of contracts. All of that is true. There's one chief way for this team to get better, roster-wise, and that's Vijay Ekstrom, right? Vijay Ekstrom goes from rookie to next year he makes a big leap. And there goes your internal improvement. Mm. You know, but otherwise, roster-wise, you're going to have to do it on the margins if you don't make a big trade. And I don't think they're going to make a big trade.
Right.
You know, so roster-wise on the margins – they need to get a center who can play every night, who's more starter level than the backup centers that they play every night this year. I think that would really help. They need a lot of shooting. And then I know the joke comes, well, they had one and they traded him to Oklahoma City. You know, so they need to nail their draft pick. I think they need to spend a couple of seconds and get back into the second round and then nail that draft pick. And they need to find a lot of shooting around, you know, the four guys. And they need to find a center who can play on the nights that Joel Embiid doesn't play. You know, so those are some of the things that they can do.
Tony Jones of The Athletic with us. Tony, I'm not asking you to mind read, but a little bit asking you to mind read. Did you, being around the guys, perceive any frustration with the Embiid playing, not playing, the idea of them basically having to be two different teams with him as a major part of the team?
I think, you know, it would be human nature if it did not wear on this team. And so I'm going to say, yes, there was some frustration at that. But the frustration is not with Joel, per se. Like, this team likes Joel Embiid. The frustration lies in the fact that this team had to be, you know, many faces on different nights. And you saw it in the playoff series, right? Like, you saw, let's take the Boston Celtics, and you know, and I laid that out in a story that I wrote today in The Athletic. Game one, they looked like a team that desperately needed a Joel Embiid. and they righted themselves for game two. Then, you know, they lost a close game three, and then Joel comes back game four. They looked like they had never played with Joel Embiid a day in their lives. And then in game five, game six, and game seven, where they got used to Joel Embiid, they ran the table, and they won the series. And that's kind of the conundrum of this team, because you need Joel Embiid to be available so that, you know, you have a team that can have a lot of chemistry, because that's what we saw with the New York Knicks in this series. We saw, you know, a team that knows exactly where each other is going to be at all points, at all times, that's been together, that's been largely available collectively all season. And then you saw a Philadelphia team that had kind of run out of gas. So how do the, you know, I don't want to incense any Philly fans here, but how does the Philadelphia 76ers, as constructed, become the New York Knicks, chemistry-wise? And that's the conundrum, because you don't know how many games that Joel Embiid is going to play.
Tony, you wrote about a sort of a conflict between some of the players and the coaching on April 1st, an interesting day because we had the whole confusion, I guess is a kind way to put it, over Joel Embiid not playing and his frustration with not, I guess not, him saying he didn't know he was going to play. The way that you wrote it, it felt like, you know, I'll just read the exact words here. On April 1st, the same day of Embiid's social media post, a handful of players met with members of Philadelphia's coaching staff before shoot-around in Washington to express concern over certain players' participation in team activities and frustration over the direction of this season. That feels like a Joel Embiid thing to me. Am I incorrect in thinking that? Because There have been some frustrations previously with him in that sort of sense.
No, it wasn't a Joel Embiid thing. It was a collective thing. And by players, you know, plural, it definitely meant players plural.
Okay.
And, you know, the wording in the story, you know, in terms of, you know, they expressed frustration over, you know, where the season is going. There was some feeling that there was just not enough collective control in the locker room, right? So you take that as, you know, to what it means. You could take that as to, you know, maybe there's a set of rules for one group, there's a set of rules for another, but, you know, there's an overall feeling that there was not enough control in the locker room. So, you know, there was, you know, that morning just happened to be the tipping off point. And, you know, there was a team meeting at the team hotel, and there were coaches involved, and there had to be talking off the ledge collectively. And, you know, it happened, and, you know, the players went, and they went to shoot around, because for a while it looked like there was going to be no shoot around that day because of this. It was just kind of dumb circumstance that, you know, this happened to coincide with Joel, you know, kind of going at it with the medical staff and the front office as well. You know, and that's one of the things, like, when you talk to the players last night, you know, there were little hints thrown around. Yeah, this group definitely went through a lot, or we definitely had a lot of changes. This group went through a lot internally. This group, you know, if you knew some of the stuff that they went through internally, I honestly thought it was amazing they won 45 games.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's definitely, you know, this definitely wasn't a smooth year, but I also think that it definitely shows how much this group liked each other. This group legitimately liked each other, and this group legitimately played for each other. And that's one of the reasons why the season never did go off the rails.
Well, the issues had to be between one of the big three. I mean, let's face it, VJ's too nice of a guy, and he's a rookie. Are you kidding me? You tell me these backups are causing issues? It's got to be either Maxey, Paul George, or Joel Embiid. One of those three.
So we're just gonna eliminate stuff right now.
Well, let me ask you this: just gut. if I were to ask you your gut feeling, and I know it's more difficult for you than it is for us. I'm going to concede that because you cover the team and we don't.
We get to speculate a lot.
Yeah, I get to speculate. I get angry text messages, but that's all I have to deal with. What do you think the odds are that Nick Nurse is the coach of the Sixers starting the 2026-27 season?
I think as of now, I think I would say that it's, I think it's 50-50.
Okay.
I think it's up in the air. And the reason why I say that, because I think, you know, there are two schools of thoughts. You know, if this team never stopped playing and you got to say it never stopped playing for its coach.
That's true.
Right?
Yeah. Yep.
But there are warts. I mean, I cannot tell you how many times that, you know, I sat on media row and, you know, sat on press row, and it's January 13th, and, you know, I'm checking my latest stock, and I'm looking up in the third quarter, and the Sixers are getting cooked. Right?
I bet the dude, man, I hear you. Man, yes, absolutely.
That was a problem all season.
Yeah, he's a podcast.
You know? Yeah, yeah.
And how many times did, you know, you look up and, you know, there's a 2-point game and the Sixers need a rebound and they can't get a rebound.
They didn't box out all year. Yeah.
They didn't box out all year.
Yeah.
So I think that there are, you know, I think that there are pros and cons to, you know, what Nick's situation is. I thought he did a good job overall. I definitely think he's a good basketball coach, but I also think he's a little Mike Malone-ish.
Yeah.
Michael Malone-ish.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Michael Malone coaches his guys hard. Nick Nurse coaches his guys hard. But I will say this, and you know, not support of Nick, but in terms of this is a big thing looking at Nick's situation, Tyrese Maxey loves him.
Well, that is a big deal. Yeah.
That is a big deal.
Yeah.
That's a big deal.
Yep. That,
and if one of your two best players loves the coach, you know, that's gonna actually make an impact. So, you know, I think it's gonna, you know, I think there are gonna be some talks. I think there are gonna be some conversations had, and I think that there's definitely got to be a direction. Like, okay, if we move on, what are we gonna do? But if we, you know, bring Coach Nurse back, how are we going to get to, you know, how are we going to get to the next level?
Tony Jones of The Athletic with us today. Tony wrote a really good article in The Athletic today about basically the entire Sixers season and looking forward. You did write, and, you know, we could hear this publicly, and I actually think some of it happened last year as well between Embiid and Morey, just sort of maybe not seeing things the same way. How big a deal is that to you, and how strong of a divide do you feel like that is?
You know, I think that it comes down to two adults have to just be adults in this situation. And, you know, you don't have to like everything that your boss does. You don't have to like everything that your subordinate does. You know, and I mean, I would like, if I were Joel Embiid, I would love, you know, Daryl Morey, because he gave me $200 million, but that's another, you know, that's another thing. So, you know, I think that, you know, Joel was really upset at the trade deadline. You know, he said publicly, I hope we don't duck the tax. And, you know, Daryl made a move that could be perceived as ducking the tax. I will say this, and I said it in the story, and this is true. Daryl Morey had multiple trades lined up that fell through that would have brought in players that I think would have helped, because I know who those players are, but I can't say them. But, you know, the bottom line is, right, you don't talk about the labor pains, you show me the baby, right?
Yep.
And, you know, what the result is that nobody came in.
Yep.
And, you know, the Sixers lost an important piece. And, you know, whether right or wrong, when we looked at that playoff run, that team looked awfully tired in the second round.
Yep.
And it looked awfully tired down the stretch of a game two where they really could have won that game and probably should have won that game, but missed every single jump shot in the last 5 minutes of the game because they had no more legs. Yeah. So, you know, rightfully or wrong, right or wrong, you know, you have to look at all of that stuff. So, you know, I think, you know, Joel put out a challenge last night. He said, ownership on down. Ownership, coaches, players, myself, we all have to get better. And we all have to figure out how we get better. So if adults are being adults, you know, if you know, Daryl is back and everything, you know, is run back, then, you know, those guys got to get into a room and really get and really hammer things out and really get on the same page.
Was any of those trade talks from Murray with anybody in Milwaukee? I'll just throw it out there.
What would you do? I mean, you trading BJ Askham?
Well, we had talks about it, yeah.
I was just wondering. I just wondered if Murray was thinking that way.
No, okay.
I could tell you that would have been the price, and let Giannis is not here. Let's put it that way.
Okay. Yeah. That's enough said. I like it.
So and you know, you mentioned, you know, the how tired everyone was at the end of that game. And you talk about the McCain thing, especially when you have a guy on the bench, no disrespect to Kyle Lowry, but when you have one of your roster spots as a guard who doesn't play, it sort of I could imagine being frustrated with that as well. Last question, Tony. I asked you about Nick Nurse. What do you think the odds are that Daryl Morey is the president of basketball operations at this time next week?
So this is – I'm going to preface this by saying I am not reporting anything.
Yes, just your opinion.
This is my opinion.
Yep.
My opinion is this. You can do one of three things here. You can keep Daryl Morey and keep Coach Nurse because he handpicked Coach Nurse. You can part ways with both of them, or you can keep Daryl Morey and part ways with Coach Nurse. You can't keep Coach Nurse and part ways with Daryl Morey because the new GM's going to come in right. And want to replace the coach. So there are three things that can happen there, and those are the three things. In my opinion, I'm not reporting anything. You know, so I think it's 50-50. I think it's really I think it's really truly up in the air. You know, and I'll be really interested to see how it goes because I think that there are compelling arguments both ways on both guys. You know, I think that, you know, if you look at Daryl, I think that there's a really compelling argument to this. How does this team get better, right? There's no money, right? We all know that there's no money. So if there's no money, how does this team get better? You get better through the draft, and you get better through the assets. So where are the assets from Philly? There's no money, right? You can't trade. You probably can't trade Joel Embiid. You probably can't trade Paul George. So where are the assets? The assets are you have a whole bunch of picks coming in future years. You have the Clippers 2028 pick. You have the Clippers 2029 swap. You have most of your own picks. You have a ton of second-round picks. Guess what Daryl Morey does well? He drafts well, right? He drafted V.J. Eskom. Everybody wanted Ace Bailey. He drafted V.J. Eskom. That turned out to be the right pick. He drafted Tyrese Maxey, you know, so he also drafted Jahni Broome, but I'm not.
We don't need to talk about that. Yeah. Didn't happen.
Nobody gives it all right.
Yeah. That's right. Exactly. Yeah.
You know, so the point is.
Well, he also drafted Jared McCain too. Yeah.
And whether you agree or disagree with that trade, he turned that into a first round pick. So. One of the only major avenues that, you know, this team has a chance to get better is right up Daryl's alley in terms of strengths. But then you say, okay, why are we in this position? Well, because we gave $200 million to Joel Embiid. you know, coming off of an injury-ravaged season. And we also, you know, gave $200 million to Paul George. So,
yeah.
It's compelling both ways. I'll just keep it at that.
All right, Tony. Well, great job in your first year here. Hopefully, it's a long
back
time.
Home too. Yes.
And you get to see that the 76ers not always great, but always interesting. They leave
That's
no
for
stone
sure.
unturned
yes.
for compelling content. So, great job on the story today. We appreciate you joining us as well.
No problem. Thank you guys so much for having me.
Of course. All right, Tony. There he is, Tony Jones.
Hey, y'all, I'm Maddie.
And I'm Poodle.
And together, we host the podcast Reality Gaze.
We are two ridiculous homosexuals who love nothing more than talking about reality television
and tearing in a new one.
So whether it's 90 Day Fiancé, Love is Blind, Love After Lockup, or any other trash TV show about lonely hearts looking for love, your gay besties got you covered, y'all.
New shows every week. Follow and listen to Reality Gaze wherever you
it's
get your
reality
podcast.
Reality Gaze, let's love.